Sup, Thrill Seekers. I'm Connor.
And I'm Dev.
And we're just as confused as you, but it's mass hysteria. Welcome or welcome back, Thrill Seekers, to a new episode of Mass Hysteria, where Connor will actually be replacing me as the permanent only host. Just kidding. He needs me, and I need him. Okay.
We're codependent.
We are. So we have a lot to catch up on. I just hated the way I said that. I got new headphones, and I can hear my inflection. Oh, that was disturbing. We wrote a blog post with our friend Joe Turner, who, if you've been listening a while, you would know we've talked about a couple of times. We did our episode 31, I think it's 31,
I think it was 31,
with him, where we got to interview him directly, and we did episode 6 before we knew him, where we talked about some of his, honestly, all of his research, because he is the subject matter expert on all things Danny LaPlante. His book is coming out very soon. The Boy in the Walls. Don't have the exact date yet, but once we do, we will be adding that to our show notes, and we'll be linking his blog below. Please give it a check out. Please give it a check out. That's what the cool kids say. Please check it out. Joe has been like so supportive of us and the research we've been doing, and we're working with some people that he works with directly. Our anonymous friend of the pod, wink wink, you know who you are. But yeah, we're really lucky that we've gotten to work with him, and he's helped us out. And so it'd be awesome if you could check out his blog, because we have a post, and it's not related to our project, is it, Connor?
I don't know. Is it?
Is it? So between now and when we formally announce the new series we'll be doing, we're going to give a little bit of Easter eggs, because Connor and I have nothing better to do.
Literally so, nothing better to do.
Make our own Easter egg hunts.
I work full-time and part-time, and I'm a full-time student, and you also work full-time and have a life. And
I've just started getting adult acne, so if that's an indicator of
how well it's going.
Stress level. No, but we're really excited for what we've been like pouring a ton of our time and resources into, so we're going to give a little bit of kind of teaser tidbits about it, and one of them is on the blog, so that'll be a little bit of a and I guess a first look at what's to come.
So again, we'll link that in the episode notes. We'll link it on our Instagram, and I'll put it on our Facebook later tonight, so
please check it out. Leave a comment. We have
comment, share it with all your friends. It's a very good article. Devin wrote it.
Connor wrote some of it.
I contributed,
but contributed, yes.
Yeah,
but also just like leave a comment, read it, because it's very fascinating and it'll kind of tip you off to what we're going to be talking about. And today we are also going to be covering a cold case, which, that's strange, Connor. Another cold case? Could that be another Easter egg?
I don't know.
So weird.
Bok bok. That was me laying an egg.
No.
Have you ever heard a chicken after they lay an egg? They do make like this weird little noise.
Is it like a squeal?
No, it's kind of like, wah, 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 wah. I don't know, something like that.
That was way too spot on. I just had to pull my mouth away from the microphone because I was laughing. Connor and I, we have some stories, but before we get into that, we are going to remind our listeners again, if you find our lives boring and annoying, one, you're in good company, but two, we will leave a timestamp where you can just skip ahead to the episode. Why do we do this kind of lighthearted section in the beginning? Because we spend the majority of the episode talking about something heavy, and we all have tough weeks, and sometimes it's nice to hear a little funny tidbit about someone's life. We are not taking away from the seriousness of the case. We just want to start the episode with something a little bit more like lighthearted before we talk about a serious crime that occurred. So
plus, like, Dev and I live about like an hour apart from each other, so like this is like a lot of times the only time we see each other during the week.
And we drive to our secret recording location with our landlord
an hour plus a piece.
Which is an hour plus each. And so,
if that doesn't show commitment, I don't know what does.
We're committed to each other. Both of our partners are like, hey, can you go on a date on Wednesday? absolutely not. We're on a podcasting date. Night. Thank you. I have a date with someone else. So this week's mass hysterical. Well, Connor just completely berated me because I got a caricature done and it was very offensive. Are caricatures supposed to highlight everything you're insecure about? Because if so, well, job well done. Artist, very talented. Me, very insecure. The mass hysterical we have of the week. Well, actually, one. Two, we talked about a while ago that one of my cats is like very in love with my roommate.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a girlfriend, but the girlfriend like only recently came over because she is allergic to cats. And my cat, I don't know who taught her this, wasn't mama. When my roommate had a friend over the next day, she was flirting with his friend in front of him. Wow. She was like, I see that you have a girlfriend now, so I'll be moving on and make sure you're aware of it.
Wow.
I mean, good secretly, I like gave her a wink and I'm like, mama's proud of
good
you.
Good for Luna.
Yeah, so, but no, our mass hysterical, this didn't happen this week, but somebody asked me earlier, like a couple of days ago, we're like talking about the podcast, whatever, because sometimes, you know, everyone, like, we do have people that listen, obviously, that we don't know personally, but we are lucky that a lot of our friends support us. Thank you. Thank you to both groups of people.
Love you.
We love you. But one of my friends was like asking, and she was like, you know, you're dynamic, like the two of you, it's funny because you're like kind of siblings sometimes, kind of best friends, whatever. And I'm like, we're everything and everything.
Oh my god, I hate us.
Me too. Stop talking. But no, but they were asking like, what is one of your favorite things that you've ever said to each other, or like, what's like the meanest thing you ever said? And I was like, oh, well, we've only gotten in like two fights, and they both lasted less than 24 hours. And then I was like telling them, I was like, there's one particular incident that sticks out in my head when I think about like, what is my friendship with Connor? And it's, you were sitting, this was at your childhood home.
Okay.
You were sitting at the table and you had like finished eating dinner.
Oh my god, why do you always tell this story?
Finished eating dinner. You know I'm gonna go.
Yes, I hate this story.
He crumbles up the napkin. Do you know the story?
Yes.
He crumbles up the napkin. He throws it. It lands in my hair and he goes, I love when my garbage lands in the trash. If you're wondering the kind of supportive, uplifting messages I get, perfect example.
Actually, that story wasn't as bad as the one I thought you were going to tell.
Were you ate the Dorito?
Yeah.
Connor subconsciously ate a chewed Dorito before. We don't need to get in any more detail than that. That'll be for next week's episode. So Connor does have, I will give it to you, you have some pretty solid diss track material. I gotta say, throwing a napkin at someone's head and telling them I love when the trash takes itself out and stuff like that. Key. If you haven't used that one, Connor gives you full permission, right?
I do.
As long
as I get credited in the footnotes.
So that makes me
laugh. I would like a works cited page.
Yeah, thank you.
In your thesis.
Connor's been writing too many papers. Okay, so this is our segue to jumping in to our case. So today's case is going to take us to the 60s. Again, we are back on the theme of cold cases. So Connor and I actually just went to a gas station at night, and it's kind of creepy when you're there by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
A little eerie, but the idea of being alone at like a gas station, a garage, anywhere where there's like, it's like a transient place, can kind of feel a little bit, you can feel uneasy or like someone's watching you, right? So Everett Red Delano, he was just shy of 50 years old. He had worked in the Navy, and he was now working in Andover at Sanborn's garage. He would work like during the mornings, and then he worked at night at Colby Sawyer College.
A mechanic?
No, it was like a gas station.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm sure they did some auto body work, but he was working the gas station section. And he'd work as like a night watchman at Colby Sawyer College. So he had three kids. He was happily married. He looked like a really sweet guy from the photos I saw of him. So the 60s, September 1st, 1966, a burglar walked in and he shot off three rounds straight.
This was in town or in Andover.
In Andover, New Hampshire. Straight into Red's head. Three rounds. The autopsy indicated that he had been either standing or upright. And it was within close range, which is like consistent with this idea of like him standing behind a cash register, right. in a gas station right. Store. So the burglar took less than $100 from the cash register. It's been estimated between $75 and $100 were taken. If you count for inflation, this is like $700 to $850. So it's not like a ton of money, but it's not like... He wasn't robbing him for $50,000. Yeah, I mean,
he didn't even take half of the money.
He did, yeah. And there was $500 saved under the cash register that, like, wasn't touched. So he wasn't, he must not have been super familiar with the gas station to know that, like, there would be additional money under the register, right? So what also was very spooky is Red had been wearing a watch, and one of the bullets shattered the glass of the watch.
That's crazy.
So it was frozen in time at 9:35, so they knew exactly what happened, yeah. When they got to the crime scene, there was water running in the bathroom. Like I said, the register had been wiped clean of the cash, the $100, but the additional $500 weren't touched. There was just a couple of pennies left, and two boys would drive by to get gas and see that Delano was dead, which we'll get on a second. But the police had no initial suspects. So someone came into the gas station, killed Red, robbed him, and then left.
And they have no idea why.
Yeah. And also, it's 1966, which means it's before DNA, computers,
yeah.
et cetera, right?
Yeah, or even like security cameras, none of that.
I was thinking that, yeah, they don't CCTV footage. So the owner of Sanborn's garage, he was named Kenneth Sanborn. He was one of the witnesses, and he told the investigators, he had asked his friend, which was Red, can you just watch over the garage for a couple hours? I'm going to do some errands to get stuff for the auto shop. And this was around 8:50 that he left. And
8:50 in the morning?
Yeah, 8:50 okay. in the morning. And then when he was leaving, he saw that, like, Red was helping someone pump gas, so that was the last that he saw him. He leaves at 8:50. A woman named Marilyn Beacon, who knew Red, didn't say, like, to what capacity, probably just, like, a friend or someone in town. She waved to him, and it was around 9:25, 9:30. She stopped to get gas and saw him in the window of the store, convenience store. And then there were two people, Mr. Lewis and Mr. French, and they told investigators that they had come by the garage and had stopped for gas, and when they did, they kind of saw another couple that was just idling in a van, like, where are the attendants? Because it didn't seem like there was anyone that could help them out. And as they kind of waited, the woman who was sitting in the passenger seat, like, shrugged her shoulders, as in, like, we don't really know what's going on either. And then that vehicle left the lot. I'm guessing they probably came in, maybe had cash to pay for it. This is embarrassing, but I don't know how gas pumps worked in the 1960s, so I'm assuming they can't just, like, insert a credit card, right?
Right, yeah,
probably. So he probably had to, like, go and ask the pump attendant to fill it. It may
have
been,
like, a full-service station. Exactly. Sometimes they don't even have an option to pay.
Sorry if you were alive in the 60s and you're laughing at us, but I have no idea, right? I'm assuming they had to get cash and help the attendant help him out. So they're probably like, oh, there's no one here. That's weird. It's the early morning.
Yeah, so probably wait 5 minutes or something.
Exactly. So these two men, Mr. Lewis and Mr. French, they went into the station, and when they entered the, like, office section of it, they thought they heard someone snoring. So they were like, oh, that's weird. And they ended up being, like, witnesses later on to the police to, like, describe that they were the ones that stumbled upon Mr. Delano's body. The other witnesses were Mr. Merton Collins. He was driving a electric company van, and he lived in Vermont, but he was, like, driving by around 9:45, and he could swear he heard gunshots, mm-hmm. which, if he was driving around 9:45, and we know the watch said 9:35, that's consistent. He probably right. was estimating, right? So these were the main witnesses that the police ended up talking to. But, like Connor's kind of hinted at, we don't have the same technology to look at DNA evidence, etc. So the water was left running. That was one clue. And they were able to dust for prints. Okay. Right. The weapon was determined to be a .22 caliber revolver. And this is interesting. The police actually, like, confiscated the firearms that matched the description in the area.
Oh, wow.
So they were really trying to figure out, like, who this could be, make a list. But the hard thing with it being someplace like a gas station is, especially in New England, because all the states are small and close together, is it could just be someone driving through, right? Through, yeah. They even searched the Blackwater River, which was nearby, just thinking like, oh, maybe someone tossed the gun. Mm-hmm. Nope, nothing found. So in the case from last week, when we talked about Arlene, you remember that the New Hampshire Cold Case Unit started in, it was the Department of Justice for New Hampshire. They have their cold case unit, and that started in 2009. So in 2013, someone who was related to Red, maybe like a grandchild, it didn't name specifically, so like who brought it up. This case
in 2013 was still cold.
2013, that's still wild, cold. Bro. So it went cold at the end of 1966 because
they couldn't find,
And to be honest, it's like they did all they could do at that time.
There wasn't a lot of options.
So in 2013, one of Red's relatives, grandchild, whatever, came forward and was like, hey, ask the unit, have you started any work on Red's case? Mm-hmm. And they kind of were like, hey, you know, not gonna lie, we really haven't looked into it yet, which is not expected, but like, it's not surprising because they were saying it's aged so long that they probably, you know, if they are launched a cold case unit in 2009, they're probably focusing on things that are more recent, right. And so when the unit admitted they hadn't been looking into it, they're like, we'll start doing research into this now, right? So the case, while it wasn't being actively worked on, they did have all the evidence saved. So they had three pieces of evidence, which this is so impressive to me, but they saved the water faucet prints. They had a single hair that was found in the cash register.
Wow.
And they also had a cigarette butt. So whoever was the burglar, like, came in, smoked a cigarette, part of the, dropped the cigarette butt. They had three pieces of evidence. So this is directly from the New Hampshire Department of Justice. And I'm just going to read it as a quote. I know that there's probably a ton of people listening who know what APHIS is, but I just think this is an interesting description. Or not interesting, but it's an important description, but it also talks about when New Hampshire started to integrate APHIS into their systems. So APHIS, the Automated Fingerprint Identification System, is a biometric identification methodology that uses digital imaging technology to obtain, store, and analyze fingerprint data collected by the law enforcement nationwide. The APHIS database was developed over a ton of many decades from the 1960s to the late 1990s, and it's maintained by the FBI. So in 1966, the APHIS system was not fully operational, and not every state submitted fingerprint cards to the FBI. The New Hampshire State Police Forensic Lab only began using the APHIS system in 1998. Okay.
Wow.
So when they entered the prints, like only the DNA, into the system in 2013, they came back with a match for a man named Thomas Cass.
Wow.
Whose mugshot photo, I've definitely seen his mugshot before, which I don't know why, but it's very distinct. So if you want to look him up, go ahead. But anyway, they came back for a match. So in 2013, they reached out to Cass, and he was freely living in Vermont. So, and I say freely because he has quite a list of offenses.
But also, he must be really old.
He was in his 60s.
In 2013?
Oh, yeah, wait. No, I guess so. Yeah, because he was 20 in 1966. So that means he was born in the 40s. Yeah, yep. So he was like 60s, 70s. Late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. Okay, so these were the offenses. If someone has any free time, please feel free to make an episode entirely about Connor and I messing up math. Thank you. Or Connor messing up Connecticut being south of Massachusetts. You know what? I will never let that go. Okay, so Thomas Cass's offenses in order: larceny, contributing to delinquency, possession of a sawed-off shotgun, conspiracy to commit robbery, while masked, escape, two counts of theft by unauthorized taking, robbery, escape, possession of marijuana, aggravated assault, federal probation violation for weapons, and the icing on the cake, in 2000, manufacturing of drugs at a federal prison.
Wow.
So,
okay, so he's got a history.
Yeah. You know, he has a lengthy rap sheet, right? He had a bunch of robberies in the area, all over Massachusetts and Vermont. He said that the only time he went to New Hampshire was when he took a joyride with a car he had stolen. And he was like, I definitely did not go to Andover. Okay. So they approached him and did not let it be known to him that they had this fingerprint match. They just wanted to talk to him at first. He was completely clueless about the fact that they came back with his fingerprints matched, right? He was a tough guy. He was kind of rough around the edges, excuse me. And he wasn't intimidated by others. He wasn't fearful of using force. He was an avid Red Sox fan, if that's any indicator. but like Red, Cass was a veteran, and he was serving time during the Vietnam War, which neither of us have, obviously, we're not veterans. I can't imagine how, like, just traumatic it is to serve in a war during the 70s.
Yeah, that was a tough war.
But he came back and he was getting into trouble with the law. So when he was young, he embraced this reputation of being kind of a tough guy. He told his wife, according to the Press Herald, and it's also in the Department of Justice report, that he, quote, was a businessman and a crook. His first wife ended up getting a restraining order against him because she felt threatened and terrorized. And he carried a gun around, and he wouldn't shy away from beating people up, which just sounds a lot like someone I know sitting next to me. No, Connor doesn't carry a gun. He does beat people up. On Facebook, not physically.
Right.
But, so anyway.
Only with words.
Yes. We're both pacifists.
Sticks and stones.
But he was like, so he's a tough guy, right? And the police returned to him in February of 2014. So they first visited him end of 2013. A couple months later, early February, they go back again. In 2014. And they tell him now, like, hey, we have all of this forensic evidence linking you to the crime. And they're hoping, like, he was 67 at the time. They're like, he's an older man. Hopefully he'll just, if we give him a chance, he'll tell us what happened.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, it was possible I was there. But then he's like, immediately stops saying anything. And he's like, I really want a lawyer. And 4 days later, he bought a gun.
Okay.
And interesting. He turned it on himself. Huh. So he was not able to be tried in the court for the crime. And this is why.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. This is why I think this is what I learned from this. This is a quote directly from the Press Herald, which cited sources from the Department of Justice. We looked at both of them for this episode, but this is a quote directly from the press. Quote, New Hampshire courts have ruled that prosecutors can introduce suicide attempts during trials as evidence of guilt, just as they would if a suspect fled police. And the attorney general argues that ruling should be no different for Cass.
Okay.
So why it took until 2019 to formally close the case is not totally clear, but he has been ruled guilty and the cold case is now solved. After the police originally visited him, in 2013, he updated his will immediately, reflecting that he didn't want to be buried. And his live-in companion, girlfriend, love interest, however she identified at the time, wasn't shocked that he took his life. And he actually, she said on the 911 call that beforehand, he believed the police were coming for him to arrest him in relation to a robbery from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he told her, this is a direct quote from him, you never talk about something that has no statute of limitations.
Wow.
So 47 years later, it was solved. And one of the pieces of evidence they used to support the fact that he was guilty, even though he couldn't be, like, officially tried, was this, like I said, how they're talking about, like, if someone has a suicide attempt, this can be indicative of guilt as well. One of the cases they cited was the State versus Evans, where a father, a father figure, excuse me, it was his girlfriend's daughter, was convicted of reckless second-degree murder and endangering the welfare of a minor following the death of 21-month-old Cassidy Bortner. This was Chad Evans, the State versus Evans. And she was the daughter of his girlfriend, Amanda Bortner, at the time. And this is an example of, like, people changing their stories, which mm-hmm. is one of the pieces of evidence they cited. At first, he was saying, oh, the daughter was clumsy, she bruised, she fell, like, all these different lies.
Right.
In the same way that, like, Cass said, oh, I might have been there, I probably wasn't there. So they, like, are this case kind of set a precedent they were able to use later for his case.
Right.
That the court admitted a variety of evidence is considered like, this is consciousness of guilt. And that kind of consciousness of guilt verdict was used to prove that Cass was responsible, ultimately, for the death of Red Delano.
That's wild.
I know. And I didn't even hear this one either. But it just, I mean, relatively recently solved, 2019.
Yeah.
And it's the first, or not the first, the second of our series that are leading up to, I guess, give a better indication of what's to come for our new series coming. Yes.
Very exciting. Get excited.
But I already get nervous at gas stations, and now I have to, I'm going to be thinking of this case when I go to a gas station.
Yeah, that's awful.
It's like so sad. He had a little family, and really he was sad. Working two jobs to support him. And now, like, basically, Thomas evaded justice. That's what the prosecutor was saying. Was like, well, he escaped justice in his own way, which is kind of frustrating.
Absolutely.
But it is nice that they were able to use the DNA to formally close the case.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Like around that time period, how they saved a lot of evidence that they couldn't use at the time.
That's
in a lot of cases.
It's like they knew.
I know they had a lot of foresight, like law enforcement at the time. It's really cool that they've been able to solve like things that are so old because they had the foresight to save a lot of evidence.
And like with Arlene's, they basically knew who did it for so long, and then it took the time to prove that what happened.
Yeah.
But for this, if they didn't enter that in a database, they would have no idea that it was him.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is just like crazy.
It is crazy.
Really, yeah, like you said, that they had the foresight to save the evidence. So until next week, we may be doing another cold case. Hint, 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 hint. We promise this is leading up to something. Stay with us. Check out the blog in the bio. Check out our Instagram. Our Instagram is almost as annoying as our introductions. So you have that to look forward
Enjoy.
To. Until next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.